Welcome to episode 165 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Mind Management by Matt Kint. And now, the cast begins.
This game, Risk of Rain, that just came out on Steam. It's awesome. So it's like a 2D platformer. Mm-hmm. And it's you could play four player co-op. And so what the game is you're like this little guy and you crash land on an alien planet and you just have to survive. But the game there's no saving and there's no multiple lives.
Oh god.
And as you continue to play, there's a timer in the upper right hand corner and this meter, and as the meter goes up, the game gets more difficult.
I feel like I've seen Grant playing that.
It was a Kickstarter game and now it's on Steam. But it's really fun. Brandon and I were playing multiplayer last night. And as you like get achievements or do certain things in the game, you unlock more classes you can play.
Okay.
It was on sale. It was $6 until Thursday. Now it's like, I think it's 10 now.
It's pretty reasonable.
And it's really fun.
I don't know if I'll
on sale again. And then on March 4th, I'm going to buy The Stick of Truth.
The what?
The Stick of Truth. South Park RPG.
Oh, God. I really appreciate that you know the release date.
Well, I've been, like, waiting for it. They released 15 minutes of gameplay, and the gameplay looks exactly like the TV show. Exactly. And there's four classes you can start with. It's, like, fighter, thief, mage, and Jew.
I need to check this out.
We need to play this with Brian.
Yeah, the Jew. So the gameplay, I watched the guy pick the Jew, and then... So he gets his, like, Jew costume, and he's wearing, like, a yarmulke and, like, that scarf that they wear. And then he gets his first weapon from the armory, and it's just called the Jew Staff.
Do you get Jew gold?
I don't know. But they have his, like, range special attack. It's like a JRPG, too, the combat. So it's like, you know, you on one side and enemy on the other, and then you, like, select your attack, and he, like, spins this... pulls a sock, and he spins the sock out... Shoots a Star of David at the And then when they get hit, they're like dazed, and there's little like Stars of David.
Of David's
oh my
going
god,
around.
This is excellent.
And so Cartman's like your quest giver guy.
How much does it cost?
I think it's gonna be $60. Yeah. It's brand new, but
I'm doing until it goes down to like 40 or something.
Looks so hilarious.
What platform is it on?
I'm gonna buy it on PC. But it's on Xbox and stuff too. I might buy it on Xbox, now I can play it on the TV, but, oh my god. And so, it's the kids, like, imagining stuff. It's a fantasy game, but it's not really in, like, a fantasy setting. It's them just pretending. So, you're the new kid, and you're...
You're putting it in your scheduler right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new kid, you're the new kid in the game. And no matter what name you give yourself, Cartman just calls you douchebag. And so, like... So funny. And so, like, your coming has foretold. And so, like, in Cartman's house, there's his kingdom, which is called the Koopa Kingdom. And they have the Stick of Truth, which is, like, you can control the universe with the Stick of Truth. And they're battling the elves. So some of the kids are elves. So they're wearing, like, green, and they have little ears and stuff.
Oh, my God.
And you get weapons, right? Because it's combat, but you never actually, it's not, like, a real weapon. Like, it's a toy, bows and arrows with the little suction cups and cardboard swords.
This is excellent.
It's so funny. And Butters is a paladin.
What
he would be.
App do you use?
Perfect Viewer.
Okay.
That's what I use, too.
It looks better than what I'm using.
But I read Mind Management on the Dark Horse app.
The Dark Horse app. Yeah.
Which is pretty nice, too.
Dark Horse, I think, has the best digital app. Because DC's is just Comixology.
Yeah.
But sometimes they don't cut it right. And MDCU is hit or miss. Sometimes it works well, and sometimes it's fucking terrible.
Sometimes it just crashes repeatedly.
Yeah, that too.
It's pretty terrible.
I appreciate the thought of, like, Netflix-style comics. I just wish it was better.
Yeah, the monks.
I wish this phone printed what it said and recognized my fingerprints.
Brandon just sent me a picture of him barely beating the game on medium difficulty on Risk of Rain.
Oh, the live as long as you can one?
He beat it in 63 minutes, 18 levels. And so at 63 minutes, the game became medium difficulty. And we were playing co-op, and like on easy, we were just getting fucking destroyed.
Aww.
You just get swarmed by the enemies. It's really fun, though. And it's really quick and simple to play. It's a lot of fun.
Maybe we should have done... maybe we should have done Ms. Marvelous Cheesecake. Look at the size of those thighs.
Well, damn!
It's not the only thing that's big.
Yeah, well.
Did you guys get issue zero of Mind Management?
No.
No.
Oh.
Laziness.
Okay, well, I won't talk about it.
Okay.
It's a secret.
Well, what's in it? No, I don't really want to... It kind of is. There's so many secrets in this comic con. I know them.
It just kind of talks about
the company,
like the conflict before the. It talks about Meru right, like gathering information for her first novel and stuff.
Oh, the first novel. Okay, everybody, welcome to a managerial episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name's Andy, and I'm sitting next to David.
What? Yeah, we're in the same room.
What is even happening?
This is awkward. We used to do it like this all the time, but now it's weird.
It's weird just looking at Andy in the
eye.
Who
are you people?
It's weird to talk to each other like there's not a mic in the room. We used to be so natural at it.
Yeah.
And now it's going to be weird the whole time.
Hey, but maybe we won't interrupt each other as much. Because we can see when somebody's like poised
That's
to speak.
True. But our listeners don't know that because I cut that out. All the
oh, you do?
Okay, you go. Yeah.
No.
Our secret's revealed.
The secret.
I guess I don't even notice it when I listen to the show.
Hmm. So anyway, this week we read Mind Management by Matt Kind, and that collects issues 0 through 6.
Well, if you buy the bundle on Dark Horse Digital, it'll include issue 0.
Okay.
It's like $9, and you get. Zero to six.
Six, I think. Zero to six, yeah.
0 to 6.
Because that's also the hardcover. The first hardcover is covered.
Yeah, but if you got the individual issues, you might not have issue 0. Yeah, but it's not
important.
Yeah, you're not really missing anything that would move the story forward. It kind of gives a background on Meru's her first novel.
Mary's little book.
Yeah, it gives you a background on her first novel, and it gives a little bit of background on the establishment of Mind Management.
Okay.
But it's not really relevant to the story that we see in issues 1 through 6.
Alright.
But it was a good issue, so if you go back and you want to check it out, I recommend it.
Okay, I probably won't.
Okay. Well, I read issue 0 first, and then read all of them.
So, okay. This is a little bit mindfucky, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
A lot.
Because, okay, a lot mindfucky, like most mindfucky, like a 0 to 10, a 10 would be the filth, right?
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then a 0 would be tarot.
Okay.
Because there's nothing...
Your just mind turns off.
Yeah, there's nothing beneath the surface with tarot. Nothing at all.
Because there's... Yeah, it's skimpy clothes. That's what I was trying to think of something smart to say in response to that. But
not even skimpy clothes. Not even skimpy clothes.
Strategically placed bits of
waterfalls,
snow,
and swords and weird posing. That's all there is to it.
Yeah,
that is all of tarot.
It's the simple things in life.
Yeah. So where would this fall on that 0 to 10 scale?
Ah, man, I don't know. I mean. I don't feel like my mind was fucked with in reading this comic. I think, I mean, obviously, Meru's mind was messed with. That's the premise of the story. But it was like reading a mystery novel. Not that I've read a lot of mystery novels, but but I imagine it's like that. We're just following along with the main character. Excuse me. And we just see how the world unfolds around her. You know what I mean? I don't feel like we're supposed to interpret anything, like, in the filth. You know, I mean, there's room for interpretation, but what I mean is, like...
The filth, I don't know, you just kind of go, I don't know what the hell sperm is doing here, kind of
like, this
stuff.
Is less referring to Grant Morrison again, this is less... I felt this was less mindfucky than his Animal Man run, where Animal Man meets Grant Morrison.
See, I feel like that... That gets more meta, right?
It's meta, but you know what's happening.
Exactly. I didn't miss anything. As I was reading Mind Management, I'm like, I'm missing something here. I'm missing so many things.
But that's why it's
there's
like
there's so
reading,
many like little details but that if I were just smarter, I would be able to figure this out.
But that's why I think it's like a mystery. Because all these questions are going to be answered in the end. Because Meru is our protagonist, and she... I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like she's going to solve this mystery at some point, right? She keeps getting closer. I mean, we see that at the end of the issue.
Yeah.
Or at the end of the issue 6. But like, the filth, we're not going to get all the answers by reading it, you know? We read the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
That volume we read was all of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened in that comic. I don't think that the Mind Management is there to be, like, trippy or... psychedelic or something like that.
Yeah, no, not trippy or psychedelic. Just like the idea that like there's so much that if I were just smarter, I'd be able to understand.
Yeah, like I feel like issues probably 1 through 4 were confusing to me, and they made me feel slow. Like, I mean, I knew there was a mystery unraveling, but I also felt like I should be able to. Like, know more what was happening, like, who the narrator was, because he referred to himself. It took me a really, really long time to figure out that it was
Lyme.
Figure
out those lines.
Well, I think that was the point. I mean, why would he refer to himself in the third person if he did? I think it served two purposes. It, on the one hand, makes you think maybe it's not Lyme, but I think at the same time it's like a conscious choice to throw you off his trail. Because even though... I wasn't sure. I got the feeling that it might be Lyme.
Yeah.
Because he kept talking about Meru coming to him or finding him.
And you know there's some personal thing there because the narrator says she really gets attached to these agents. Like, oh, this is going to be another one. She just keeps going through them. Like, there's a personal connection. Like, not only does the narrator know who Meru is and has been following Meru, but, like, knows her habits and knows what she prefers.
The other interesting thing, too, is, you know, we see the characters in the comic talk about Lyme before we ever meet him, and he seems like a villain, like he's some kind of evil...
He's the guy who caught everybody on the plane, he gave him all amnesia and crashed
them. He's this bad, bad guy, but if you, like, thinking back and you see his narration, he's not a bad guy, and then when we meet him eventually in the end, he's definitely not that person.
Yeah.
He one could say that, you know, his reasons for giving everybody amnesia and all that stuff were for the big picture, right? So, he's not a bad guy, but because our protagonist is pursuing him, and he's like this mysterious character, before we ever meet him, it makes him seem like this evil person. Because that's how comics are. There's, like, an evil guy, you know? Maybe not everybody's, like, a mustache-twirly, hand-wringing supervillain. But they have some kind of evil design for the world, potentially.
Yeah.
Or maybe even on a smaller scale than the world. They're going to do... like to do hood rat things with their friends. Police.
Yeah, it's like you get the Immortals and you know that they're antagonistic towards Meru, but you don't know their greater purpose until issue, I think, 6... So it seems like, you know, Lyme is perhaps manufacturing this so she doesn't find him, even though there's a sense of inevitability about it, because he says it's been done before. So I think you're right, it really does make him seem more villainous.
Well, the thing, too, is we see, you know, we see when Meru first gets on the trail, we see the CIA watching her, right? And we think, oh, these bad guys are watching. They must be bad. You know, why else would they be hiding out in the shadows? And then we see the Immortals come out, too. And they're also going after Meru, but they're also going after the CIA guys, right? And then we hear Lyme. We hear word, people talking about Lyme. And so I thought that the Immortals were an were some kind of agents of Lyme's, and it turns out they're not. They're like the cleanup crew, right?
Yeah.
They're putting all these leftover loose ends to bed, right? And so it's like, I guess from that perspective, you could say it's kind of mindfucky because you don't know where all these, there's all these people and agencies orbiting around Meru as she's trying to put this mystery together, and you don't know until like issue 5 or 4 where everybody stands in relation to Meru.
See, the first 4 issues, I'm fine with that, because that's like just run and it's like the, like you said earlier, the detective story kind of stuff, right? But it's like when issue 5 and 6 come around and it's like everything just kind of gets revealed. That's when it gets a lot more abstract, I think. Especially, like, the text on the side changes, which those little notes were kind of cool all along, but then there's the running, like, thing, like, why don't you wake up? What does it say? Which issue was it? Was it 5 or 4? I don't know, but it says along the sides, like, why don't you wake up? Think, focus on the talisman. Why can't you figure it out? I'm doing everything I can to try and communicate with you, like, stuff like that. I'm like, oh, but I don't know what any of this is.
Yeah, it's like, is it Lyme saying it? Because he's purposefully keeping her in the dark. She walks away, she forgets, and then he intercepts her documents at the end. So, is it to herself? Are these her case files?
You know, I think that maybe they are supposed to be her case files. And the reason I say that is because, you know, maybe she realizes that she's going to forget, which is why she sends them to herself. And so as she's retelling, you know, she's reading the story and maybe she won't remember. It'll be all new to her, right? And so these are little notes of herself to kind of make her jog her memory or start acting before it's too late or something.
Yeah, I think they're definitely her case files to herself. Because she, at the point when everything is revealed, she realizes it's going to be a cycle. She realizes that, okay, when I was the 2 year from the plane, I forgot, and that's why I started the thing again. Like, it's a 2 year cycle. Every 2 years, she does this again. And so they're definitely her documents back to herself, and she's trying to help herself out, but for some reason they don't want her, or she has to discover it on her own or something like that. I don't know, there's this meta level that I'm not figuring out, and it bugs me that I'm not figuring it out. And I think it's in the explanation, right? Not in the, well, that moment where Lyme is explaining everything to her, and everything becomes clear to her, and then you kind of skip around a bit as you get Lyme's backstory, and then ta-da, she's back in her apartment, and it's 2 years later. Like, in that gap is all the answers I need.
You know what builds the mystery? It's that even when we read other mysterious things, like The Long Halloween is classic detective noir, or The Private Eye, we kind of get this certitude of what's going to happen. We know in The Private Eye, even though it's not finished, that the guy's gonna find out what's going on, and they're gonna blow the whole thing wide open. In, like, Long Halloween, you know Batman is going to crack the case. He has to.
It's Batman.
But here, I know Meru's going to figure out what's going on, but I still don't know what the end result's going to be. Is mind management going to be revealed? Is she going to end up siding with Lyme and deciding it's better if the world doesn't know? So I think the fact that as readers, or at least for me, that I can't easily guess what the ending's going to be makes it seem more mysterious, and it's not like a bad thing, but it also made it seem, I don't know, harder to interpret.
You know, I think that's okay, because this is, you know, we just read 6 issues of this, right?
Yeah.
And while, you know, there's tons of questions as you're reading along that you have, and some of it gets resolved by the end of issue 6, but there's so much more unanswered questions, right? And I think that's frustrating for a reader. But as from a comic perspective, if you're a fan of this comic, you're going to keep buying it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay that there are unanswered questions.
Yeah.
But I can see, to me, I feel like, and I'm not like trying to project onto you, Andy, but I feel like maybe instead of you, maybe you feel like your mind was messed with because you're frustrated that the results were not, you didn't get all your questions answered.
No, not just, okay, it's not that the questions didn't get answered. It's that I feel like,
wait, because you said you feel like the answers are there. and you're searching for them, right?
Yeah, I feel like...
But they might not be there.
I feel like the pieces I'm missing are here, right? Like, the breadcrumbs are there, and I'm just not smart enough to put it together.
Oh, I think maybe you're not giving yourself enough credit.
But, like, there's little hints of all kinds of things in here.
And yeah.
It really does help the book, like, feel, like, really rich in world building and that kind of thing, but it just makes me feel like I'm stupid. Sometimes. Not stupid, but, you know, like, the...
Well, you feel like you should know.
Yeah.
You should be getting something out of this that you're more than what you are getting superficially, right?
I think because, like, the meta level of this comic, like, the stuff written on the sides is, like, almost literally screaming at you as the reader, like, why can't you figure this out? I'm doing everything I possibly can
to
help you figure this out, and you're just not figuring it out.
But
think of the talisman!
I think
the talisman!
The thing with that is that you are assuming that the stuff in the sidebar is written for you.
Yeah, that's true.
But like I think we all kind of agree that this is written by Meru for Meru, because we're supposed to be reading her own work.
No, this is written by Lime, because the narrator's Lime. He's the one writing the notes.
But it's not Lime the whole time.
Some of it's Meru.
Yeah, some of it's Meru. The narrator changes.
Yeah.
But see, it's okay to not know. You know,
it does make me want to read the next volume to see what happens in this next 2-year cycle of Meru's trying to
move
forward.
Yeah, I mean,
does she get another CIA agent and do all of this all over again and just find Lime somewhere else?
I mean, if you take the stuff in the sidebar as Meru's words to herself, then it will be the same thing happen again. I mean, Lime even talks about, like you said earlier, about the, you know, another agent. And even the agent she builds, the one she teams up with for a while, says that this isn't a new thing, right?
Yeah, they've said all the other agents who have been assigned to this, we've lost.
Yeah.
Wait, aren't these the side notes departmental notes? Yeah, well, it says Mind Management Field Guide.
Yeah, because the book is like a field guide with...
Right, but then... So this one isn't a good example of it.
Yeah, like the top... What does the top say? The top says, when filing a report, all essential details must fall within this short... solid live box area. This is a border for standard non-bleed field report.
If you look at the... Like, some of them in issue 5... It goes to all caps, and the sentence just cuts off midway.
Huh.
She's using this mind management field guide to write these messages to herself. Where does she get it? I don't know. That's another mystery. Or maybe it's completely irrelevant. That's the thing with mystery stories, right? There are things in there that could potentially throw you off.
I wonder if this is written by someone in mind management who's, like, been fucked with. Or if it's Meru. Like, how did she get the field guide? I'm not, like, complaining. It's just so tantalizing.
No, it's fun. I think that's the appeal to... I mean, there's lots of people out there who just, like, love mystery novels, and they read them voraciously. And that's got to be part of the reason why they love doing it, because it's a journey that you could potentially... You can get ahead of the protagonist, potentially.
Yeah.
By just paying closer attention to what's going on in the story. But you might not get that, and that's okay.
The one thing that I knew I should have gotten, but then didn't for a really... Like, until the very last page, was that this was a 2-year cycle.
Like, that wasn't clear to me either.
Yeah, it's not clear until they get to the end, and, like, it talks about how it's 2 years. That's been 2 years, and she's got this great story for a new novel.
Yeah, what it was, though, is they dropped all the breadcrumbs. So that's the part where I was like, I should have figured that out, and then I didn't.
Well, I mean, you kind of get hints of it when she's talking to her agent, and he talks about how it's been 2 years since she's published her book. And
oh, yeah, that's right, I like stuff.
What's interesting, too, is if this is a cyclical thing, and the agent... Do we ever actually hear the agent say that it was, it's been 2 years, or does she say that?
No.
Her literary agent.
I think her agent says it's been 2 years.
I think so.
So maybe he's in on it too, right?
Yeah.
Because if this has happened more than once, it's been more than 2 years since her book came out.
Well, I don't know. He could be in on it, or they could be messing with his mind.
That's true.
To make him think it's been 2 years.
They could be managing his mind as well.
I actually totally thought at first that she had been one of the people on the flight. And that was, like, the source of her confusion.
Hmm.
Because she sees the news report, and it's like she suddenly remembers that this happened.
Hmm.
But, I mean, I think they say that she wasn't... Part of this, actually, I want to talk about the art a little bit, even though it's early for that.
Let's do it.
In our series of events. But, okay, so at the beginning, she has the dream sequence in issue one, and then they show a woman on the plane, and she's like, "What's going on? I don't know where I am." And it, to me, it looked like Meru. And I can't tell if that was intentional or if the art is just in such a style where people do kind of look similar.
They all kind of blend together, maybe?
Yeah, so, and maybe that's purposeful in and of itself, where it's not Meru, but it does look like her, and that's okay. But there were a lot of events here where you would see, like, I think even in the dream sequence she had, the woman who, like, machetes the dude at the end, I was wondering, is that Meru? So, I don't know if that's supposed to be like, yeah, she has done this, and maybe that's why the amnesia flight happened.
Well, Lime is on the flight.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay, I just... What if she was on the flight and going back to tell her story, and Lime was also on the flight and wiped everyone's memories so that she couldn't?
That could be one.
Conspiracy theory.
I mean,
Wait, which one's her?
The reason he gives...
Page 5. In the bottom left, holding the dude's hand.
The reason he gives for wiping their memories is so he could escape, right?
Yeah.
So no one on the flight would remember that he was there. Which doesn't really work, though, because the flight manifest says he was there.
Yeah. But, I mean, okay, he's a pretty nondescript dude. If the immortals weren't on the plane, for instance, like, which random passengers are going to recognize him again? I guess mind management is so powerful that it is a threat, but I really want it to be, because it was something that happened to Meru. I don't know.
Well, I mean, she doesn't remember because, I mean, it turns, when Lime tells a story, it turns out that she was in Zanzibar,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And as far as we know, she doesn't remember that. And is that because she doesn't remember more of her childhood? Or is it because he always wipes that from her memory when she leaves?
Yeah. I'm actually really curious. He said, like, that she was special somehow when he found her, but I want to know why. Like,
what made her? Well, she wasn't affected by his
murdering things.
Yeah, but at the same time, she is affected by his other powers, like memory loss. So I want to know more about that.
Yeah. Something about her makes her somewhat resistant. Like, if that's her power, maybe she just needs to, like, hone it and work on it somehow. I don't know.
Well, and is she the one who forces the immortals to the bottom of the lake, too?
Yes, I think she is. She realizes she can do that.
Yeah, and there's that shot of her where Lime's sitting in the boat. I think it's one of the only splash pages where she's standing and her aura is, like, flowing around her. It looks like she has a sword.
She's got all armored and shit on.
That's cool. So, yeah, I mean...
The other old dude at the village sees her that way, too.
Yeah. She's a little like Natasha in her ability to resist Lime.
Hmm.
Oh, Lime's wife.
Lime's wife, yeah. I wonder if
that
was part of the affinity.
That whole part I liked. The whole thing with him and his wife and, like, the idea that he could never be certain that he wasn't making her feel that way.
Until the very end.
So she's like, you don't think that, like... But even then, like, even if somebody told him that, maybe that's the problem with a guy this powerful, right? He could have planted that thought into her head. But then the whole premise of mind management is that the thought implantation process is so strong that it actually makes it true. Like, in the beginning with the Archduke, it says that, you know, like, the whole premise of him making things lucky or unlucky is that it became so ingrained in everybody's mind that, say, this umbrella was lucky, that it actually became lucky, and it actually did make him invulnerable, because it was in everybody's mind that it was so strong.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the problem. This is what's a little bit mindfucked with me. Is did Lime put in the thought into her head that she was that she had the ability to resist him, but in so doing of him putting that thought into her mind, it became true that she could actually. Or is that too paradoxical?
Well, the thing is, right? If that was the case, and it became true that she could resist him, would that mean that she would realize that she could now resist him, and now she realizes that he did implant a thought in her head? How does that negate the original act of changing her mind?
It doesn't negate. It just.
Like happily coexist because they're contradictory, right? He uses his powers to change her mind,
but thus then making her immune to his mind powers,
right?
Yeah,
but it's just
it's just like a time travel paradox. Yeah. It's just it's self causal.
What he really needs to do is just get over it and be like, she loves me. That's cool.
Yeah, like, and if I don't know, it would be really no.
I mean,
it would be wrong to say it doesn't matter whether or not he's making her love him if she loves him, because that would be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing is, too, he was doing it on a subconscious level, right? He was worried that he was doing it subconsciously, because it turns out that he was affecting people subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
So, very interesting.
At the same time, it took him a while to catch on
that he was...
she liked him. Because remember, she wrote, their meeting spot on her stomach.
Oh, yeah.
And then she's like, you don't know how many people showed up before you.
I know. As soon as I saw that, I was like, why would you do that? You work in mind management. Like,
yeah.
How many people could see that? What do you even... It didn't seem like a well-thought-out idea.
It was just kind of like, if she thought of this, and then he probably didn't go through the trouble at the very beginning to make her like him, but then make himself not realize that she liked him to that point. It gets really complex, right?
Yeah, it's in the beginning you'd have to sort it out. And you're right. I think the kind of things her doing that, he would have put that thought into her mind, or at least put an impulse into her strong enough to make her want to do that.
But then it seems like she actually liked him before he felt that way about her, so he would have needed to mind manage himself subconsciously into this. And I and don't think that works.
That feels his way too premeditated.
His subconscious is like, you need a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's way too premeditated for him to have done that at that stage in his
life. So he should have just thought about that and chilled the fuck out instead of murdering a bunch of people.
But he didn't murder them consciously.
They murdered each other.
He just got really upset and projected it to the entire city.
He's gotta control himself. Isn't this the premise of, Frozen? I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. I heard it's, supposed to be really good, but...
I'll watch it on Netflix.
Okay, so we talked about the story exhaustively. No, probably not. I'm sure we could go on much longer. So, do you want to talk about the characters at all?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. That's right. So what do we think of Meru as a protagonist?
She's got, no personality so far. She just kind of does the premeditated thing.
But is it because her personality's been wiped out?
See, managed you can't talk away? About character, because the character you can talk about is Lime. Everybody else is just projected upon.
Well,
and Duncan would be independent.
And I think Bill probably acts independently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he's being mind-managed until the end.
Yeah, because I think, he was such a negligible threat. There was no need to mind-manage him. Lime knew he was going to die or end up, mind-wiped anyway.
That's just a result of him being assigned to this.
Yeah, it's not like he was like, you gotta have feelings for Meru and she's gotta kinda maybe like you back.
Kinda maybe.
But it was interesting that Meru, she did seem mind-wiped, but at the same time, I don't know, I guess she's a good vehicle for the mystery because she allows you to sympathize with her because there's so little going on with her. That her emotions don't cloud the whole thing. You can say, I can see why someone would feel angry or confused in these situations, and why you'd want to pay your rent and not be homeless.
what's interesting too is like a good protagonist, we see growth in her, right?
Mm-hmm.
She becomes a stronger character, and she grows, and she basically solves the mystery, right? And then she gets mind wiped and gets reset, which is funny and sad.
Yeah, it's very sad for her.
She'll get over it.
But
we know it.
I immediately bought in and started to sympathize her when she. I wish I remember what issue happened in, but she's. There's this moment, I think, when she's flying to Zanzibar, and she says that the plane ticket cost twice her rent. Right? She's like, I could have... And she says something like, being so scared of your current life situation, but still throwing yourself headlong forward, despite it.
I think that's issue one, actually.
Is that issue one? I really like that sentiment, and that's when I bought into her. That's I think, a core part of her character. Like, it doesn't matter how... worried or scared about her life falling apart, she's just going to continue throwing herself forward, whether she wants to or not. Like, her subconscious will just push her and to keep going.
I think, you know, the audience always responds well to a strong character who's very driven, and she's definitely that. And so, you know, it makes for a good hero.
Yeah, and by the end you realize she is stronger than Lyme, because if he had his way, it seems like he wouldn't have her repeating this cycle. He'd just have her stay safe at home. Mm-hmm. And instead, she keeps overcoming his mind control. And he's supposed to be the most powerful man on Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that actually probably makes her the most powerful person ever. That's cool.
At least from a certain point of view, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the actual line is, it's when she first gets to Mexico, says, there is guilt that Nehru can never seem to outrun. Regret from neglected relationships, abandoned foster parents who love her and are desperate to help, and a life that's disintegrating under her feet even as she presses forward. I love that. That's great. Because that's her character.
Yeah.
Right there in one page. Like, as much as she's worried about everything, it doesn't matter. She'll just keep pushing.
And, you know, she's so focused on her task at hand that we don't see, you know, you said, Jen, that she doesn't have personality, but I think we just don't see any other aspects of her personality. We get, like, little hints, right? In her interactions with Bill, I think,
mm-hmm.
that she
yeah.
has at least the capacity to have a personal relationship with somebody like that. But she's so focused on the task at hand that we don't see that kind of thing happening.
Right. Like, at the end of six issues with her as my protagonist, I don't know what it would like to go out to dinner with her.
Mm-hmm.
I know what it would be like to go out to dinner with Bill. It'd be really fucking depressing.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Meru, I don't know. I don't have a good sense of that.
You know what it is? It's that we don't get the common tropes in comics. I know I talk about tropes a lot, but it's...
Well,
like,
I mean, comics are a tropey genre.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you think about, I don't know, Batgirl, or Batman, or anything in Cape comics, and I know these are not comparable.
Yeah.
Totally different, but in most comics, you get characters with, like, a heavy mix, and they purposefully say, here's the drama, here's the, like, personal sadness, and here's the humor. Have those three in, like, some manner of equal sprinklings. And here, it's more like, this is the story, she's driven by the narrative, we're not going to kind of fill in the quota for, like, here's the gag. So, obviously, it's a different kind of story. I think it reads a bit less like comics we tend to do on this podcast, but it makes Mera's personality seem really different. And, of course, she's not, like, Batgirl or the Hulk or something. That's not... a sensible comparison, but at the same time, at least for me, it my expectations of what a comic character should act like or normally acts like affects my perception of her.
Hmm. Yeah, that is why it's harder to get a beat on her.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, 50% of characters in Cape Comics is, okay, how did this person's paternal figure die, right? Almost all of them have dead parents or dead paternal figure. But, like, Meru, I think, has dead paternal figures too, but you can only really get that because she mentions the fact that she has foster parents.
Yeah.
Who really love her very much and just want to help. Which, okay, that's wonderful. But that's not... None of her is about that. So, like, all the stuff that you can normally read into her, based on our previous experience of reading comic books, it doesn't really apply because it's not integral to her character.
It's actually like meeting a real person for the first time. Because with a comic, you can look at the character for the first time ever and be like, you are a mopey anti-hero. Yeah. You are a trickster figure, you know, etc. And here, it's like, okay, well, we know that she is a writer. A poor person. Right? And, I mean, those two often go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And some dead parents somewhere along the way. But it's not like I can say Meru fits into this mold. This is going to be her personality because I can see it from these, like, five sentences. Which is pretty refreshing.
Yeah. Hmm. Legit. Who else is in this? Is it mostly just Bill and... Or not Bill, Lime...
Bill and Meru, yeah. And I think we talked about Lime.
There's the... Yeah. Already. Perrier, if you want to be fancy about it, sisters.
Perrier. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there's all the briefs at the end.
Yeah.
Which are kind of cool.
Well, yeah. I mean, Perrier, she jumped off the balcony. That was a really interesting moment for me, because Lime says she went off script. So what did he intend her to do? Was she going to reveal it all to Meru? Was she... I mean, it seemed like Lime had no intention of her dying.
Well, we see that she's trying to... We see in her interaction with Meru that she's trying to resist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really difficult for her to go off script.
Because her power doesn't...
Yeah.
Doesn't gel with her changing it.
And so she ends up... I mean, she takes her own life. And at least... information is given to Meru. She's able to read what was typed and glean the next step in her journey. But that is interesting. I had forgotten that Lime said she had gone off script.
It makes me wonder who she was working for, because I think in the little brief at the end, or someone along the way mentioned that the sisters became, like, motivational speakers or something.
Hmm.
So it's like, what is she doing in Zanzibar, like, you know, typing like a crazy person? And then, you know, Lime's controlling her, and she obviously doesn't want to reveal some of this information, but then she kills herself too late. It was very mysterious. I think that's the adjective I keep using for this comic.
Well, her sister's already passed, right? Which is part of the reason she's crazy.
Oh, I did think. She?
I think it mentioned that her sister had already died.
I think she said she had a sister.
Had,
I think that's what Perrier says.
I missed that.
But it doesn't come right out and say that she died.
Hmm.
Or, yeah. Like, there's a constant mention that as long as they were in mind management, they wanted them to always be together, but you only saw the one sister on her own. So it makes you wonder, even if she didn't die, where's the other sister? Why aren't they together?
Mm-hmm. They're separated in some way.
Yeah. Which is not good for them.
So you might be able to postulate that the other sister is... off drawing like a crazy person, right?
Yeah. Where, who was your favorite, like, what was your favorite power person?
Oh, that's interesting.
I guess I really like Duncan.
Yeah, Duncan's was cool.
Because I like the way that it effectively gave you a mind management reason. Because all of mind management is about extrasensory perception, right? Perception of other people's thoughts and projection into other people's thoughts. All of mind management is just about that. So, knowing that that's the premise, how can you get a character to be able to tell the future? The immediate future. Like, there's nothing about memory manipulation or thought manipulation that would let you be able to tell the future. I like the way that Matt Kent describes it as he's simultaneously surface reading and processing the mind of everyone around him. And his brain is processing it and tunneling it into this ability
mm-hmm.
that makes him perceive time this way. I'm like, that's sick.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. I don't know, a lot of the characters are very interesting. I mean, some of them we don't see them in the actual story, but like the archivists, the monks,
oh, yeah, they're cool.
That's really cool how they like are like a shared mind to a certain degree. I mean, it's not like the Borg, right? But they all share the memories and they funnel into one person, and they're like the checks and balances of mind management, because they, you know, they're unaffected by everybody else's powers, it seems like, and what they are recording is the actual unmanipulated truth.
So
that's cool.
So, I work on a university campus, and there's monks that come by every once in a while, and I saw a Tibetan monk walk by in his robes after I had read this, and I felt a little bit safer.
I really, really hope that the monks become a bigger thing in this comic, because I really like that concept of that they're there to keep mind management honest. And it's, like, not that they're even doing anything, it's just... I don't know, it seems very optimistic, and I enjoy that, because the fact that they are there and they know the truth makes people behave. Yeah. And to me, that speaks well of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
But, my favorite, I think, was the ad man. I don't think we actually saw him, except in the little briefs at the end, and how he worked with the two sisters. But to me, it highlighted really well what mind management was all about. Like, you could convince someone to have, like, a pulmonary embolism or something, yeah, just by having the advertisements placed properly. And then people were thinking they weren't seeing, like, mind management propaganda, and it was just, like, right there, but no one could see it, so...
Oh, yeah, like the t-shirts?
The t-shirts, and then the ads in the newspaper saying, like, you know, two immortals have surfaced at this place, and no one could see it. That seems very what the heart and core of this organization was all about. Like, secret assassinations and, you know, not quite black ops.
Yeah, the embolism was real smart.
Yeah. Like, because how could you ever trace that back? If someone just dies of natural causes, that's natural causes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So wait, aren't there monks who, like, as part of their monkness, train to be, like, do martial arts?
Yeah, like Shaolin.
Yeah, so couldn't there be, like, a ninja monk enforcement arm in this?
There could be. I think...
So what you're saying is you hope there's ninjas in issue 7.
I want ninja monks!
I think that'd be really scary.
Ninja monks connected by a hive mind of monkery.
And they, like, mind assassin... Mind Katana.
Mind Katana. That would be the most fucked up division of mind management. The Mind Katana Ninja Monks. Now I really want that to happen.
You've been convinced.
Should write Matt Kim the letter.
I should write my own fucking comic book. Mind Katana Monks.
Get on that, Andy.
Be right there next to the Land Shark comic. No, what was it? Shark Bear?
Sea Bear.
Sea Bear, yeah.
No, it was Land Shark versus Sea Bear.
That's right, that's what it was. My comic would be right next to that one.
It's quality material.
Yeah. Okay, so wait, we mentioned the art briefly before. What did you guys think of the style of this? Because I think this is written and drawn by Matt.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Yeah, okay.
You know, it's very stylistic, but I thought it was good. I don't think it took away from... Sorry.
It's okay. I'll cut it out. I'm cutting a lot out.
I don't think that I didn't view the art as a negative. I know, and that sounds weird, especially coming from me, for the listeners who are familiar with our comics, or with our podcast, because I usually complain when especially when Cape comics are what I consider to be not comic-y art. But this isn't a traditional, like, Cape comic, so I guess I didn't have the same problem with that. And this is going to sound strange too, but I'm used to reading not necessarily indie comics, but comics outside of the big two, and having different art styles and more how should I say this? Like, outside of the norm, I guess. And so, you know, like, we read Underwater Welder last year, and the art felt familiar, like, similar to that.
Yeah, I think
to certain degrees.
There was a sketchiness about both of them that mm-hmm. kind of made... It works well because no one's mental state is stable in either of these comics, mm-hmm. Underwater Welder and Mind Management. And I think if everything was super crisp and clear, we'd be way more likely to take what we're seeing as truth. But I think it's still too early to decide that everything we've been told is real.
Well, it's interesting that you say that too, because like we read last week, we did Private Eye, and that is, I guess you could say, that's kind of a mind fucky comic too. But the art in that was very crisp. But the thing is, the what's interesting, well, now that I think about it, you know, the whole idea, the kind of the idea about Private Eye, at least the world that that comic takes place in, is that there's a sheen over everything, right? People are hiding behind this artificial exterior. So we, because the what we see is so fake and we know it's fake, the we know that there's a mystery underneath. But in here, the mystery is front and center.
I think, too, Private Eye had a sense of objectivity. Like, even though there was a mystery, we knew that what we were being told about P.I. was probably true. Like, the events that happened to him. Yeah. Whereas here, it's like, I do not know if I want to believe what Lime has said so far, or what Meru's narrative claims.
Yeah, and in Private Eye, we had a third person, maybe not omniscient, but, like, at least omnipresent narrator, because we could see what other characters were doing out that weren't P.I. And here, we're always with Meru.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the art style works for this kind of comic because it's there's kind of like a constrained flow to it, the way that the color seems to kind of bleed a bit, but it's constrained by the inking. But it really works well when it's there's that kind of fluid constraint, but then you go to the full pages, the moments where you kind of like see people, you see their aura, you see their true nature, and you get like the one of Meru when she's like got the fucking sword and the armor and shit, and she's like, it's like flowing everywhere, and that like that's in such stark contrast to the what you're supposed to see or what you're
what's like, shown to you.
What's shown to you versus how Lime really sees things, and how that guy in the village really sees her. Like that contrast then becomes really stark, and that's I think like that's cool because then you can see the reality beyond mind management when those moments, those full pages, kind of happen. So I really like the way it works to do that part of it. Yeah, that was my one smart thing to say about art.
Well done, Andy.
I got one thing today. It's a good day.
Is there any other points you guys want to bring up, or should we rate this?
We can rate it.
I'm down to rate it.
Okay.
All right. How about you go first, Jen?
Okay, I was going to say I'll do it. Oh crap, what did I get myself into? I said that so unthinkingly.
It's fun because I held eye contact with David while I did that. I saw the fear go in David's eye when he thought I was going
to
say
you know,
him.
Truthfully, I'm ready to talk about this one. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, why don't you?
Okay. definitely, I'm going to give this one a 5. I rated Private Eye a 5, and I had the same level of enjoyment reading both of them. And I will say this. This has really piqued my interest in mystery-type comics. Because usually I just read the Cape stuff. At least that's what I pick up weekly. But these two comics have inspired me to seek out other mystery-type things and, you know, look more at... Because Marvel doesn't really have stuff like this. And neither does DC. So yeah, I'm going to go check out more this kind of stuff. But so the reason why this comic gets a 5 though is I really enjoyed the ride that I was taken on. And it's very smart, and the settings and the whole idea behind mind management and all this stuff, it feels very fresh and new to me. So I just thought it was really good. I mean, it's all, the whole package is really good. So, and I would recommend this comic to anybody, even non-comic book readers. My wife doesn't read comics, and I thought she would probably like to read this one. But,
yeah, so yeah. Handing this off to my wife when we're done talking about it.
So 5 for sure. Easily 5.
All right.
Okay. I'm ready. 4.5. I thought that this was really enjoyable. It was an easy read, and by that I mean there are some comics that I really have to force myself to slog through, but this was really engaging, and I just kept going issue to issue, no problem. I never once stopped to think, like, oh, I need a break from this. So it was just an enjoyable experience, and I do I liked the mystery and the fact that it was such a rich world, even though it was told just from the viewpoint of two characters. I thought that was a pretty remarkable authorial feat. To make something so interesting and, like, broad, but only through two people's viewpoints. It didn't have the same, I don't know, for me, pizzazz that The Private Eye had, and that's why it's not a 5 for me. But I like this, and I will recommend it to people.
Okay.
Andy?
Oh, God, what did I give Private Eye? We need to start writing this kind of shit down somewhere.
We probably should.
Because yep. I want to rate this higher than Private Eye, but I don't remember what I gave Private Eye. I think I gave Private Eye a 4. So I'll give this a 4.5.
Okay.
Because this feels like...
Rate it based on the other comic.
No. I'm not comparing. But I feel like this has really good world building, and I feel like the art in this is really good in that I don't feel like there were any shortcuts taken for sake of time. I feel like this is Matt Kent sitting down doing a project he really wants to do and really has, like, he's got the story in his head and he wants to put it down, and, like, you get that creative impetus, you know, and I feel like I can see it on the page and I love seeing that. The only complaint I have about this comic, really, I think it comes down to pacing. Like, the first 4 issues are kind of all paced the same with Marrow, and you're kind of following her along, and it feels like a detective story. And then you get to Lime, and Lime kind of reveals everything, right? And then it all moves really, 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 really quick. And then it was 2 years ago. And that jump just kind of, like, it throws me off. So that's the only reason I'm not giving it a 5, just because of that. But otherwise, yeah, 5.
Good.
No, not 5. 4.5. 4.5.
So before we wrap this episode up, I just want to mention one thing for all you Lost fans out there. I don't know if you noticed, but this is also a Flight 815.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. They're both Flight 815. So, yeah. I don't know if that was on purpose, but that's the truth.
So, okay. This was the last episode in our Best of 2013 series.
Correct.
What was the best thing you guys read all of last year? You can include these, even though you didn't read them last year.
The best thing I read that was published in the last year... East of West.
Saga. Absolutely Saga.
Oh God, you guys are going too fast. I'm loading up the website to see what our past episodes were. At www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com.
Oh, did you mean stuff that we read for the podcast?
No, it could be anything.
No, well, just, I mean, that doesn't change my that doesn't change my answer. Still, East of West is the comic I look forward to the most. There's another comic, actually, another Jonathan Hickman comic that we didn't read at all for this year, and I don't know if it made it onto any of the best of, but he wrote a comic called God is Dead. It's an ongoing series. I forget what the publisher is. It's not Image or Dark Horse or Marvel or DC. It's like Prophet or Prophecy or something. I forget. Well, it doesn't matter. If you go to your local comic book store and say you want Jonathan Hickman's God of the Dead, they'll know what you're, or God is Dead, you'll know, they'll know what you're talking about. And basically the premise of the story is that all the, like, gods from the various world pantheons just come back. They come back to life and they basically go to war with one another. And there is a... In the last issue, I think the last one was issue 6, came out a couple weeks ago, there's a part where the Norse pantheon, well, part of it, it's Loki, Odin, and Thor attack Olympus, and the only people on Olympus are Aphrodite, Zeus, and Ares, and everybody dies except for Zeus, because he puts a lightning bolt through, I think Thor is the last god, or no, Odin, he you know how Odin has one eye?
Yeah.
It becomes a hole in his head because Zeus throws a lightning bolt through his face. It's a cool comic. Like, there's a part where the Aztec pantheon attacks Egypt and Egypt kicks their dick in. It's really... it's a very interesting comic. Because a lot of the people, like the humans that don't become a worshipper of some god, they just become, like, irrelevant. And so it's these... I mean, there's a group of scientists who are trying to, like, stop this from happening, but there's a bunch of people who, like, go native and become worshippers of these pantheons again.
That sounds really cool.
And it's all set in, like, modern times. It's very interesting.
That sounds neat. Yeah, I was reading back through the website, and we read a lot of crap last year. There's, like, nothing on the last year's worth of stuff that we read for the show that I would put on my best of. Other than the best of 2012. Hawkeye was really good. But, you know, I actually really enjoyed reading Star Wars. The one that follows, I think it's written by Brian Wood. I think that's his name. I don't know. But it follows, like, Princess Leia after episode 4. Before episode 5.
Hmm.
And it's really good.
I've heard a lot about that comic. I haven't read it yet. Have you read The Star Wars?
No, I've been buying them, but I haven't started reading them yet.
Oh, man. That is a fucking weird comic. Because it's a comic, but it's based on George Lucas's original draft of Star Wars.
Oh, my goodness.
It is a trip.
I've been buying those, but I haven't sat down and read them all together.
Oh, man, you are in for a treat, because okay. It's kind of hilarious and awesome and painful.
Oh, I need to buy these.
Stormtroopers have lightsabers.
I really need to buy these right now.
All right, I know what I'm reading this afternoon.
It's fun. I don't know if it's like a great comic. I mean, it's not the best thing I've ever read.
Hey, whatever, it's fun.
It's fun, and it's definitely entertaining. I like reading it.
The other one that I've been reading that I liked was Captain Marvel with Carol Danvers.
Mm-hmm.
That one's good. Which I just bought the number one for Ms. Marvel with Kamala Khan, and I really want to read that one too.
Oh, I didn't pick that up.
I hear that's like one of the best number ones in a long time.
I'll have to pick that one up. I haven't been reading Captain Marvel because I just felt like I had a lot on my pull list.
She's joining Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Her and Venom. She makes sense. I don't know about Venom.
Is it Flash Thompson Venom?
I don't know which Venom it is. I just saw the symbiote
is from space, so
that's yeah.
Iron Man's part of it.
Do we know like what planet, like where the symbiote came from?
No,
it's just some alien symbiote from space.
Mm-hmm. It was brought back to Earth from on a space mission.
So
on accident.
There's probably like a planet full of those symbiotes somewhere, right?
Well, they can reproduce. I mean, Carnage is a child symbiote of Venom. So.
But, like, I wonder where they originated. What the planet's like.
One comic
I want to see the Guardians go there.
One comic that I will say, you know, it's been on my pull list for a really long time, and it's always been one of my favorites that I am strongly considering removing from my list is Green Lantern.
Really?
Geoff Johns isn't the author anymore, and it's just not... I don't like it as much.
It went downhill?
Yeah, it's just not as... Like, I'm not interested in the story. I don't like the way the storyline is going. It's not poorly written. I mean, maybe one could say it is poorly written if the story's not as good. But it's just... I don't like it as much, and I think I'm...
That's the thing. Is with a character like Green Lantern that's not only been around for so long, but there's so many different Green Lanterns and so many different variations on the Green Lantern story already. Like, there's already how many Earth Green Lanterns?
There's four? Five.
There's already five. So
six if you count Alan Scott.
Okay, so there's five and a half.
Because there's Hal Jordan, John Stewart, Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner, and Simon Baz now.
So think about all the different kinds of Earth Lantern stories you could tell with five and a half different Earth Lantern characters. And then throw in all the other core, back when they had GL core and stuff. Like, it's hard to come up with a new storyline, which I think is why Geoff Johns was really smart when he, like, did the whole War of Light thing. It's like, okay, let's open it up even more and have the, like, the six different color lanterns. But it's tough.
Yeah, it's
I imagine that's got to be one of the tougher creative ones to do.
Well, I mean, they have three or four titles. They have Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, Red Lantern, and I think there is still New Guardians, which was the Kyle Rayner-centric book. Mm. But it's funny, because now... There is a Earth Green Lantern as the title character in each of those, except for Simon Baz. He's not in it. I think he's in Justice League of America. But Guy Gardner is now a Red Lantern, and I think that is the best book now of the four.
Because Guy Gardner is the best Green Lantern.
Pretty much.
He always has been. He's just been waiting for everybody else to realize it.
But it's just...
By the way, I had my wife read Justice League International Volume 1, and she hates Guy Gardner.
Aww.
Because he's the biggest douchebag.
Yeah. So, I don't know if I would call Green Lantern a worst of 2013, but I'm just kind of done with it now.
Alright.
enough. We were talking about best of, and I figured I'd throw that in there.
Fantastic Four is the one that it's renewing, and I'm like, eh, just leave it off.
It's good.
If you're a creative team, I'll pass.
Well, but did you read the Man of Fractions?
I Fantastic own them. Four? I haven't read them yet.
They're so good. that's up there next to up there next to East of West. I look forward to both of those, particularly FF, the Future Foundation. Mm. Both Matt Fraction's run and Jonathan Hickman's run were, I just loved the whole premise of that comic. Seeing the kids doing all this cool super science stuff, it was just cool. And then, you know, when Matt Fraction's FF removes the Fantastic Four from it, and it's like it's Scott Lang, Ant-Man.
There's a She-Hulk, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's Jen Walters, Medusa from Inhumans, and Miss Thing.
You mean Miss Thang?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just she's a woman wearing a suit. That's the thing. It's the thing's suit, and it's awesome.
So, okay, have we ever done Fantastic Four for the show yet?
Yeah.
Well, we did Galactus. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've done Fantastic Four.
Okay, we'll do Fantastic Four. We'll add that to the bottom of our upcoming list.
Yeah, because see, like, you know, that was always called, like, the world's greatest comic magazine. That was, like, the subtitle back when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I was always kind of, like, meh on the Fantastic Four until Jonathan Hickman's run. And I'm sold on them now.
Yeah.
So even though it's changing creative teams, I'm still going to pick it up. At least the first issue to see what it's like.
All right. We'll put it on there. But that's after what we have coming up next week, which is Boxers and Saints, Volume 1. Because it's like a whole big story, right? Split up into two books. It's like thick, isn't it?
It's super thick.
So we didn't... It was like on all the best of 2013 lists, but like I didn't want to like knock it out one week. So we're just going to put it after best of 2013 and do it in two separate shows. Just kind of split it up based on the two books that come with the volume. Because I've seen it comes like a set of like two books.
Yeah, there's, I think, Boxers, which is about the Boxer Rebellion, and then Saints, which is about a young girl who's, I think, inspired by Joan of Arc?
Okay.
Something like that. But so, it's a lot of pages. It's like, I think, 600 or 700, so...
So start reading tonight.
Yeah, it's good to divide it into 2 weeks, definitely.
So next week we'll do Boxers, and the week after that we'll do Saints, if we actually manage to read all of it. We'll see. I'll try. I promise I'll try. We'll see how many words are there on each page. That will determine how far I can get.
So the next episode you will listen to will be Boxers. Will be part one of Boxers and Saints.
Yes,
is what Andy's trying to say.
We got good stuff coming up after that, including an anime/manga series.
Andy, you haven't read.
I haven't read it. I haven't read.
So we're gonna do Attack on Titan. Jen and I have watched it. Jen has read the manga.
Everything
and
that's been
man,
published.
I
am obsessed.
I've only watched the anime, but I freaking love it. So we're gonna do a couple episodes.
So that's after Boxers and Saints, and then after that we'll do Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So if you missed any of that, go to our website www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, hit the future shows. If I bother to update it, it will list all of them. Which it better by now because I just said that. If you have a suggestion for what we should read after our Fantastic Four series, or if you got a good Fantastic Four comic, let me know, because otherwise I'm just going to Google best Fantastic Four stories and that's what we'll read. Send us an email, let us know at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
You know, even when you're not here, I still point at you on the screen.
Oh, really?
Like on Skype, it has your little picture and it has Jen's little picture, and I point at your little picture.
All right.
And follow us on the social media, facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
I do that too, but.
The little Vanna White move.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, the people are.
They can't see what
you're doing.
They don't either, yeah. Anyway, until next week, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Jazz.